Coming up on Golf Today, the search is over. John Rahm grabs a trophy in Mexico for lucky number 7 on the PGA Tour. Is he the man to beat once again? Should he be the favorite at the PGA in 2 weeks' time? And speaking of two, a second LPGA win for Vandy's Marina Alex in Palos Verdes. Leaderboard was filled with stars, and she outshined them all. Big summer ahead for the LPGA. And winners who didn't win. Players who didn't take home a trophy but took home momentum, belief, confidence, something intangible. We've got all the feels on a Monday. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
And a good Monday to you. This is Golf Today. Dave Manack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week magazine. The first edition of the Mexico Open as a PGA Tour event is in the books. Sunny skies, big name champ. What'd you think of the week?
Well, I think John Rahm was the biggest name in the field, the biggest name left with a trophy. If nothing else, hopefully that will encourage other prominent players to head there next year when the tournament is rescheduled again. John Rahm, he's certainly going to be back there to defend his title. So let's hopefully that elevates the quality of the field a little bit next year. But they got the champion they deserve.
Yeah, a lot of positivity from the players, from the media about the golf course. What better? You got your family there. Kelly was there, baby boy Kepa as well. So this could be one of those events that becomes not just for the player, but the family to enjoy a little beach time and maybe a little shopping as well.
Yeah, it's also one of those tournaments that kind of sets a tone as you're really starting to head into the meat of the season now. We've got a major championship 2 weeks away. We've another one a month after that, another one a month after that, then into the FedEx Cup playoffs. Right now is the time you want to be finding some form. In this game, you know, you would have wanted to start a few weeks ago at Augusta as well, but finding form at any point from this stage onward in the season is always a good thing. And one of the biggest names in the game suddenly found some form that didn't look as though it was there for the last couple of months. Yeah.
First victory since June of last year. That, of course, the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines outside of San Diego. Able to kind of exhale after questions about his putting stroke. He was feeling pressure, having been replaced atop the world golf rankings by Scotty Scheffler. But a big moment for John yesterday. Puts him third all time, by the way, amongst winners from Spain. Sergio has the most with 11, Seve with 9, and now John Rahm with 7 after being tied with Jose Maria at 6 wins. Seve, by the way, by far the most majors with 5, Ollie with 2, Rahm and Sergio now with 1 major apiece. Here's Rahm on the win in Mexico and his place in the game.
I came this week wanting to do it. I've spoken in length about the importance of Seve and his impact in the game of golf and how, you know, I play because of him. And nowadays, you know, we have a much bigger reach. The PGA Tour becoming a bigger tour. And with social media, we're worldwide stars, bigger than they were in the past. And I feel like I can make some impact in Mexico as well. And Mexico deserves a good event. And you can even see golf growing in Mexico as well.
Yeah, I've noticed this week you're pretty good at staying focused and competitive inside the ropes. And then when you get off the course, you're smiling more. You're having more of a good time. How are you able to switch that on and off so quickly?
Work. When it's go time, it's go time. When it's over, it's over, right? I've said it many times, I'm a very different person on and off the golf course, especially when we're competing on a Sunday. You know, that's the stressful part of the job. You'll see a much more serious face and a much more intense look outside. I consider myself very lucky to be in the position I'm in life, however hard I worked at it. I'm very fortunate, so I really, truly have no reason to be that intense or upset in any way. So, yeah, I mean, I'm always going to be smiling afterwards. I got a wonderful family and a wonderful life. So, I mean, again, I count my blessings. And this should be a difference, right, in and off the golf course. I mean, we're in there to do a job. It's a different mental state than off. So I don't know how or why I switched it so quickly, but it's just how it's always been.
How does it set you up for the rest of the season now that you've got a victory on the year and going forward with this game?
Well, I think I'm not going to count the COVID year when we stopped. You know, it's been I guess last year it took me a little bit longer to win. But, you know, in the past, I've given myself a chance to win, and I've been able to do it early. This year I got close in Hawaii and Torrey, and since then, not really. So I'm happy. You know, kept working hard even though the results weren't coming. I got a little tired of answering questions about stats and plotting and short game and this and that. And
now you can talk about it.
And numbers. Yeah, exactly. It's just kind of how the game is. I knew I was improving. I was seeing results, and this week is proof of it right now. I think that Sunday with Tiger at Augusta gave me quite a bit of confidence. I was a little bit technical in my approach, right? A little too technical. I'm a field player, and that Sunday I told myself, just go out there and hit the golf ball, make shots, make the swings you want to make, see the ball slide and execute. And I shot a 3-under without having my best stuff on a tough day, so I applied the same thing this week, right? Minimal technical thoughts and just visualizing the ball slide and the shot and getting back to my true self. And I truly saw the difference. You know, my iron game was really, really solid, especially into the wind. And, you know, those shots on into the wind on 8, 9, 13 went long, but still great. And 17, I mean, they're not easy shots, and I was able to hit really, really good ones. So, you know, sometimes we deviate from our path, but this time we didn't. I'm happy to get my first win, get back up there in FedEx Cup standings, and hopefully get my second one, too.
Let's take a look at the players with a win on tour, the most consecutive seasons. Dustin Johnson, 14, so looking for number 15 this season. John Rahm, now 6 straight seasons with a win. Justin Thomas has that as well, wants to bring that to 7 a little bit later. But how about John Rahm? You know, he was the best ranked player in this field, the best player in the field. It didn't necessarily putt the way he wanted to over the weekend, still found a way to win. Missed the 18th fairway, still found a way to win. It wasn't necessarily pretty, Eamon, but it had to be satisfying.
What really struck me, Damon, watching this was wondering how Tiger Woods did this every week. What I mean by that is it's very rare in this game where a player shows up and he's supposed to win. That's the baseline expectation. And because John Rahm was by a margin the best player in the field and the highest ranked player in the field, the expectation was he's supposed to win there. And we talked about that at length here last week, that the expectation being heaped on John Rahm's shoulders. And it's a very difficult thing to do. And he went out there in the first round, shot 64 and took the lead. So the expectations only ratcheted up more and more. And then he held the lead again at the 36-hole mark. And then, you know, he shared the lead as it went on, but he still left with the trophy on Sunday night. And this was a statement win in a way, and I think it was a statement as much to John Rahm himself as it was to the rest of the golf world, that he can actually handle that kind of pressure. And that seems like an odd thing to say about a guy who's actually got a major championship on his mantelpiece as we speak. But to show up there with the expectation that you're going to win on Sunday against a field of some of the best golfers in the world and to meet that expectation, to me, that's a real sign of the quiet confidence John Rahm has built in himself now. Because this was a test this week as much for his own kind of confidence as for the reviews that he was going to get. And he matched that test.
I think this will go down as one of the more valuable wins of his career. Obviously, it's not a U.S. Open. It's not a win in the playoffs. But I think there is something different to the texture of this win, that he has been constantly asked about his putting, for example. He even mentioned that in that sound right there. And you take a look at the difference of this week versus the rest of his season. It really did come down, for the most part, to the putting. Look how he played and how he putted this week and his strokes gained around the green versus the rest of his season in the hundreds versus 22nd in the putting, 18th versus 132nd. So there was definite improvement on and around the greens. I'm curious, though, we showed this active streak of wins, and how do you think Rahm handles the questions being thrown his way? Because as we know, it's not just about hitting golf shots and being a highly ranked player in this game. He wants to get back to number one in the world. How do you think he handles it? You know, wearing the crown, dealing with the questions when you're off for a couple of months and not getting victory. Is he built for the long haul to kind of handle the stresses of being one of the best players in the world?
He's proving that he is. And even in that press conference we just heard from there, he's talking about his attitude inside the ropes versus his attitude outside the ropes and how he's a different person. And he's famously fiery inside the ropes. And that's never going to go away entirely. But as long as he can manage it, well, then it's probably more asset than liability. And we saw evidence of that patience this week, because we just saw his strokes gained putting numbers. He actually lost strokes to the field with his putter Saturday and Sunday.
Right.
And still held on to it. Now, he was still 3.5 strokes to the positive for this week with the shortest club in his bag. So that just shows you how well he putted Thursday and Friday to put himself in that position. But you didn't see the frustration getting to him over the weekend. He realised that he put himself in position and he just had to kind of bear down and do what he needed to do. And it's not as though it was kind of handed to him. Guys came at him this weekend. You know, Tony Finau shot 8-under yesterday. Brandon Wu played really well as well. Kurt Kitayama. Guys came and tied him through the 12th hole yesterday. He was tied for the lead. So all of the pressure that had built up for days, and the putter wasn't quite cooperating, and guys are circling him.
Yeah.
To me, that's the kind of situation where an old John Rahm might have shown a little bit less patience, a little bit more frustration. And I think he just looked like a guy who trusted himself in the moment, who knew what he had to do. And those four pars he made going down the stretch were real gut check moments there.
We left 2021. I thought he was the best player in the world, hands down. Did we forget how good he was? Just in the first few months of this season with the emergence of Scottie Scheffler, did people forget how great John Rahm is?
I think we'd forgotten how good he was even by the end of last year, because John Rahm's last victory was in June of last year at Torrey Pines, the US Open. His previous victory before that had been in August of the previous year. So he hasn't won as often as his talent would seem to suggest.
Right.
Plus, we've seen so many other multiple winners. You know, we had Hideki win a couple of times to start this season. Obviously, Scottie Scheffler going on his four-win run now, and Sam Burns getting wins as well. So it's very easy with the recency bias that exists in this sport and certainly in this business to focus on the latest hot player out there. You expect a guy like John Rahm to win more often. Yeah, he's got the 7 wins. He's got 15 top 2 finishes in his career on tour. He's got 24 top 3 finishes. He's actually been in the top 10 in 49% of the starts that he's ever made on the PGA Tour. This counts as his 60th top 10 of his career, and he's only been out there for 6 years, and he's winning every year. We just expect that talent and the guy who puts himself there week after week to leave with more trophies than he does.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily an indictment of John Rahm. Maybe it's just evidence of how difficult it is to win there.
He speaks eloquently about Seve, much like Tiger did about Jack, much like Rory did about Tiger. Do you think that he would be happy with a Dustin Johnson-type career of 24 PGA Tour wins and a couple of majors, or do you think his sights are higher?
There are maybe a handful of guys in this entire game who have a reasonable expectation of a career that could surpass Dustin Johnson's. And Dustin Johnson's is a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah.
24 wins in this era and a couple of majors, and he's not done yet. John Rahm will be one of the very few guys who's got a club in his hand on the PGA Tour these days who would have a reasonable expectation that his resume at some point will improve upon that.
Yeah, big expectations, a big win for John Rahm, his 7th win on the PGA Tour. And like so many of the kids these days, go on social to celebrate a little more. Felt amazing to get another trophy, even better with Kelly and Kepa by my side. Thanks to all who made this possible. Vamos, Mexico! And then he does the same thing in Spanish. I speak a little Spanish, but I'm going to let that pass before trying to give that a shot. Felicidades, Señor Rahm. I'll at least go there. All right, folks, time for the Comcast Business Tour Top 10. The reason this is so important, since 2009, every player who finished in the Comcast Business Tour Top 10 has made it to the Tour Championship in Atlanta at East Lake. And this year, the FedEx Cup winner will receive $18 million.
Well, there were two amazing achievements yesterday on the LPGA Tour, Damon. Marina Alex earned her second career victory, and a major champion rendered Jerry Fultz speechless in her post-round interview, and that's not easy to do. Beth Ann Nichols joins us next as we relive both.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And Wind Grips, the best grips in golf. And Bushnell Golf and the New Wingman, crank up your game. And by introducing the Cobra King Forge Tech Irons, a better player's iron.
Right now we're joined by Golf Week senior writer Beth Ann Nichols. Great to see you, first of all. Let's start with the winner in Marina Alex. Tough course, stacked leaderboard. What's your takeaway from her win in California?
Well, I always find it really interesting to hear how COVID has impacted players on the whole. And for Marina, I would say there was, you know, some positive and some negative. The positive was that during that break, she took some time and evaluated life, and she was really enjoying the sense of community that being in one place for a long time provides, that you obviously don't get with tour life. And she wondered how much longer she really wanted to keep playing. But then the negative there was that, you know, as she's figuring out life, she's doing other things outside of her routine, working out more twice a day because she's bored. She's not swinging a golf club. She's, you know, with COVID, she's not getting the regular physio that she usually gets. And so the extreme downside of that was that she developed a big back issue that really plagued her for a long time coming outside of COVID. And so, you know, this has been a huge battle for her, wondering if she was ever going to win again. As you say, her lone victory came in 2018. And so, you know, this was a big day for her, not only physically to see that, you know, this is a hilly golf course, she's playing multiple weeks in a row and she prevailed, but also mentally. And so I think winning probably raised more questions than answers for Marina as far as what comes next for a player who was thinking about whether or not there was a time clock on how much longer she was going to be competing on the LPGA. So I'm really interested to see where she goes from here.
Bethan, it would be hard to top Marina's story as the feel-good story of the week, but do you have another one?
I do. You know, I thought I was thrilled for Andrea Lee. I mean, this is a player that really, you know, played well in 2020, played great in her first rookie season, and then COVID again. You know, everything seems to come back to COVID. That 2021, all the great work from 2020 was erased, and 2021 wasn't that good. And so, you know, she ends up with poor status. She has to play on the Epson Tour, and she wins on the Epson Tour early April, has a great showing in Hawaii, and then goes to the Monday qualifier this week. She was born in Los Angeles. She's been an honorary member at Palos Verdes since age 15. Her instructor is the director of golf there, and she shoots 68, and she misses out on Monday qualifying by one shot. And then when I saw that the tournament decided to give Andrea a sponsor invite, I said to myself out loud, this is how you do it. This is the kind of player who deserves an invitation. And I was so thrilled. And she completely made the most of the opportunity. You know, now she played so well with that top five finish that she's into the next event, the Cognizant Founders Cup. There will be a reshuffle, and then she'll be in everything for the rest of the summer. And so it's a whole new slate for Andrea Lee, who is a former world number one amateur, terrific player, great personality. And I'm really excited to see when she looks back on this week. This could have been a major week in the career of Andrea Lee and the direction.
Beth Ann, another invite was Anna Davis, 16 years of age. She won the Augusta National Women's Amateur. I was thinking she'll have a nice couple of days. She'll miss the cut. She'll learn a few things and go back to school. How impressive that she was able to not just make her first LPGA start, but actually make the cut.
Yes, and the fashion in which she did it was remarkable. She's standing on the 16th tee. She's outside the cut line. She knows she needs to, in her words, do something special. And she plays aggressively. She hits the green in two. It's a par five. She makes a rare eagle on that hole. Goes on to birdie the 17th. Pars the last, moves inside the cut line to play the weekend. So, you know, she knew she needed to do something, and she got it done, which just tells you a lot about the mental makeup of Anna Davis. So I know she was disappointed that the weekend didn't go as well as she would like, particularly Sunday's round, but you know, she's teeing up again in the Cognizant Founders Cup here in short order, and then she'll be competing in three major championships. We'll see her at Pine Needles for the US Women's Open. We'll see her at the Evian, and of course she'll be at the first Women's Open Championship at Muirfield later this summer. So a lot of big weeks coming up for Anna Davis, and I'm sure she'll sprinkle in maybe some junior events, some maybe the U.S. Women's Am, some other events, you know, that aren't quite on the professional level. But I'm really excited. She's so chill, you know. She's rocking the bucket hat. She's just such a fun storyline to follow.
You mentioned the upcoming majors, Bethan. One former major champion was on that leaderboard yesterday in LA, Hannah Green. What's up next for her?
A break. She's flying back to Australia for a few weeks, so she won't be in New Jersey, but she'll be back for the match play. She's gearing up for, you know, a heavy major season. And this was, you know, I know she was disappointed that she wasn't there at the finish, even though she was playing in the in the final group at Palos Verdes, but she finished runner-up the week before in LA as well at the LA Open, and really is firing on all cylinders. And really, when you look at what's ahead for golf in Australia, with a big announcement this past week that the men's and women's Australian Open championships will be held concurrently for equal purses, you know, there's just a lot to get excited about for Australian golf, not only with Hannah Green, but of course, Minjee Lee. Both of them are major champions. And of course, I think the biggest question mark is with where it's falling on the schedule now in December, it's outside of the LPGA schedule in this off season time. So, you know, it's not currently an LPGA event. On the men's side, it is a DP World Tour event in Europe, but forever the Australian Open has been on the LPGA schedule. So it'll be interesting to see if they make some moves there to bring it back, because I do think it's important when you look at how much excitement there is around Australian golf right now. And kudos to them for being the first to do something this cool.
Well, if Hannah's heading off for a break, there's a lot of speculation about someone who's been on a break and when she's coming back. Nelly Korda has obviously been out for medical issues for a while now. Do you have any sense, since the LPGA Tour is not coming back for another 10 days until the Cognizant Founders Cup, is there any prospect or any knowledge if we'll see Nelly Korda there?
Unfortunately, I don't have any insiders in scoop for you on Nelly. I think we all saw her Instagram post recently where she was kind of like this. I was like, yeah, that's kind of how we feel when we see you again. So hopefully, you know, she's back on Instagram. So hopefully she's out and about and close to being able to practice soon again. Her sister will actually be at Media Day for the Meyer LPGA Classic tomorrow. So I thought I'd lob a question to Jessica and see if she has any insight for us. So stay tuned. We'll see what Jessica says.
Sounds good. A lot of folks excited for Nelly's return whenever that happens. Beth Ann, always excited to have you on the program. Thanks for the insight. We will speak to you soon.
Thank you.
All right. Beth Ann Nichols, Golf Week Magazine. Let's take a look at who's in the race to the CME Globe. Huge summer ahead. Four more major championships on the LPGA. By the way, all counting down to that season ender in Naples. Danielle Kang still at the top spot. Marina Alex off that second victory moves all the way up to 11th place, earning 500 points. All right, my man, lots to take away from Palos Verdes. Was there a story that caught your eye in particular?
Well, there were a couple. The Marina Alex one, for starters, it's only been a year since she started working with Claude Harmon, and I reached out to Claude last night to ask him what they'd been working on, and he said that Marina Alex is a thinker, which he kind of wryly pointed out doesn't necessarily always work as a positive in the world of golf. They had made some technical changes, but what they were essentially focusing on was stop playing golf swing and start playing golf. And he forwarded a message he'd shared with her on Saturday night going into the final round about the idea of just kind of enjoying yourself. Just go out there and post a score. Forget about the context of the situation you're in and just focus on what you're doing. And clearly, you know, he said it's a massive win for her. He hopes it convinces her of how good she actually is. I thought that was a wonderful moment there. And the other one actually came yesterday. And there are very few things in this game that are really impossible. Shutting Jerry Foltz up, Damon, is one of those things. But Lydia Ko managed to do that after her round yesterday. Let's take a look at the video.
You asked for Chris Wicker to come out and give you a little physical therapy as well. Is that a concern moving forward?
I hope not. It's that time of the month. I know the ladies watching are probably like, yeah, I got you. So when that happens, my back gets really tight and I'm all twisted. And it's not the first time that Chris has seen me twisted. But it felt a lot better after he came. So, yeah, there you go.
thanks.
I know you're lost for words, Jerry. Honesty it is.
Isn't that just... this is a relevant topic for women athletes, and it's never really spoken of very much on how it affects performance. So it's a wonderful moment of authenticity for Lydia Ko, and spare a thought for poor Jerry Foltz, who's standing
there. Yeah, he was stuck.
Absolutely gobsmacked. He did not know what to say.
I was gobsmacked. I saw the rustle on social media. I turned to my wife and said, babe, is this true? You get little back issues? And she said, yes. I was like, amazing insight for us. I mean, guys, we're kind of dumb.
How long have you been married and you didn't know
this? I've known my wife for 20. We've been married for 15. I didn't know that. I mean, look, we're not...
You might be more of a caveman.
Women are brighter. Women are smarter. We know that. Just one more example. I tell you what, the stars came out to play this week in Los Angeles. I love seeing Jin Young Ko kind of back to getting her feels after that difficult finish at Wilshire Country Club, coming off that quadruple bogey and never really in the mix on Sunday. I think we can put that story to bed. I can't wait for Nelly Korda to get back, just because I kind of missed the tussle that we saw at the end of 2021. But how wonderful to have the emergence of Marina Alex. And I'll be honest, I thought she was going to spend the rest of her days, the last highlight would be of her hugging Suzanne Pedersen after Suzanne's big moment at the Solheim Cup. So neat for Marina Alex to learn on her own accord, I'm not done winning, because she even had some doubts and shared that with Morgan Pressel, that she wasn't sure if she would ever win on the LPGA Tour again.
And over the last couple of years, we've spent an inordinate amount of time on the very top tier of the LPGA Tour, and this desire for a rivalry between Nelly Korda and Jin Young Ko, which we may still actually get at this point, but this is a reminder that there is actually depth out there. We talk a lot about depth on the PGA Tour. There are no dominant players on the PGA Tour now, though Scotty Scheffler might dispute that at the moment. But there is more depth on the LPGA Tour than perhaps the general conversation we have around it would suggest. And Marina Alex, at 31 years old, which is real veteran status on the LPGA Tour at that age, is proof of that. And Jin Young Ko, to me, is still the most fascinating person in the women's game. And she started out really well and she ended really well, but she shot over par both Friday and Saturday. And this is a woman who had shot so many rounds in the 60s consecutively earlier this year and was just almost a metronome in her consistency and brilliance over the over the last 6 months, but you could argue probably over the last 3 years in the greater scheme of things. And you see a little wrinkle here and there with Jin Young Ko. You saw it with the quad last week.
Sure.
At Wiltshire. You see her flattening out, her flatlining for Friday, Saturday's rounds here at Palos Verdes. The absolute invincible aura isn't there anymore, and we're only a few weeks away from moving into yet more of the major season in the women's game. So it's a fascinating storyline.
Yeah, they call it like an invisibility cloak. For her, it's an invincibility cloak that she's trying to get back on her shoulders. I think we haven't heard the last of the world number one. All right, folks, take a look at an update on the Epson Tour, more from the women game. That, of course, the road to the LPGA. Gabriella Thenn is the winner of the Garden City Charity Classic at Buffalo Dunes. Win marks her first career victory, and with that win, $30,000, and then jumps to number seven in the 2022 race for the card. Take a look at the leaderboard, final round 67. And look at the player who finished second. That's Alexa Pano, teenager who turned professional after competing in the Augusta National Women's Amateur. So congrats to Alexa on a fine week as well. And after the break, we're taking a look at some of the guys who didn't get the job done over the weekend but put together a heck of a performance anyway. We call it Winners Who Didn't Win. That's coming up next. Time now, folks, for Winners Who Didn't Win. Let's continue the little chat on Tony Finau. Eamon, I find it interesting. He's played in the last President's Cup and a couple of Ryder Cups for the United States. He moves up from 24th to 17th of virtue of this runner-up finish. And I think he's an important player on Team USA, whether it is a President's Cup or a Ryder Cup. He's one of those players you can kind of pair with anybody. Very popular player. Not that the U.S. seems to have any problems right now getting wins against the internationals, or as they showed of late anyway, in the Ryder Cup, but I think that Tony Finau is an important piece in that, in an era of some combustible personalities, say a Bryson DeChambeau or a Brooks Koepka. It's nice to have a steady Eddie like Tony Finau. He's a winner who didn't win, seemed to make a setup adjustment that paid dividends this week in Mexico.
Sure, if Tony Finau was any more laid back, he'd be horizontal. It's just kind of the personality of the guy, and that works really well in a team dynamic, but this is also an individual sport.
Yeah.
And Tony Finau has been off the boil basically since he won the Northern Trust in that playoff with Cam Smith last summer, which is kind of surprising. It's more noticeable with the Tony Finau because he puts himself in the mix, or has done over the last few years, so many times. It's almost an anomaly. If you saw a week on tour and Tony Finau was not in the mix on Sunday afternoon. He got a lot of airtime because he always put himself in the mix. And then suddenly to drop off to the extent that he has over the last 6 months, to me is something of a surprise, really, because everyone thought when he got that win at Northern Trust, the floodgates are going to open. Yeah. We hear that cliche all the time.
All the time.
Didn't happen for Tony Finau. A lot of that had to do with his putting. His putting statistics have been pretty poor this year. They weren't even great in Mexico. He tied 60th for putting in Mexico. Now, he was 15th on Sunday, as you'd expect, when he's on his way to shooting a 63 out there. But I thought it was interesting in that sound we just heard from him, where he drew a distinction between when he was asked, did he have a good week or feel good about his week?
Yeah.
And he said he felt good about his day.
I like that
and
answer.
To me, that suggests that Tony Finau, he's not happy with finishing T2. He's happy with the progress that he's made to whatever he's working towards. But what he's working towards is more victories, not more high finishes.
It's an important distinction that he said it was the day and not the week, because this is a player either, you know, from the outside view, it's like, well, what a nice guy. You know, we want to see a little more fire in this player. I think he has plenty of fire. There's nothing we can say at this table or a fan can say that's going to be more motivating for Tony Finau to get a third victory on the PGA Tour. Had he given a different answer, I'm happy with the week, it might have made me shake my head. I love that he said, I'm very happy with this day, but that I need more work to do in kind of getting these changes to settle in. And he's starting to see the fruit of the labor from the setup change. But I think it's important, an important distinction that he made, that it was the day that he was happy with and not the week that he was happy with.
Whereas you look at a guy like Brandon Wu, who can probably say he's happy with the week, because he's really been struggling. He's missed 11 out of his last 12 cuts out there. He did finish tied third at the Puerto Rico Open, but it's been a struggle for Brandon Wu for a while, as he talked about, in the difficulties of trying to get his swing in shape. So Brandon Wu's going to look at this week and take it away as an entire positive. Mm. His goals coming from where he is right now are probably a little different than where Tony Finau's goals are right now.
I think you're right. I think Kurt Kitayama as well, you know, playing alongside John Rahm and showing the length off the tee that he has, a couple of wins on his DP World Tour CV, but a very strong week for Kurt as well. Do you have a winner who didn't win, a specific player on a tour that caught your eye?
Yeah, I would go off the PGA Tour here and go to the Korn Ferry Tour. People forget what an up-and-comer Chris Ventura was considered a few years ago. He was on the OSU team with Matt Wolff and with Victor Hovland, his fellow Norwegian. He won twice on the Korn Ferry Tour back in 2019. He got his PGA Tour card. He struggled when he was out there. He missed a bunch of cuts last year. He's back on the Korn Ferry Tour this year. He's made 10 starts in 2022 on the Korn Ferry Tour. He's missed six cuts. T45 in the Bahamas is the only top 50 finish he's had all year. But at the weekend down at the Huntsville Championship in Alabama on the Korn Ferry Tour, he finished tied fourth. And that's probably going to remind us, and certainly remind maybe Ventura himself, of the talent that he has and what the expectations are. Certainly he struggled over the last couple of years, but a result like this, just a top five finish, given how barren it has been for a while, I think is probably a real positive for a guy like Ventura.
Got to be tough for a Chris Ventura. Got to be tough for a Justin Suh. Some of these players who were kind of ballyhooed, like Colin Morikawa or Victor Hovland, who are having to wait a little bit longer. If this was 25 years ago, it's okay to take your time. I think it's harder and harder to take your time when your peers are being as successful as some of theirs are.
And it's really tough if you're being judged by the same metrics of a Colin Morikawa and a Victor Hovland and a Matt Wolff simply because you were on the same team as them. You could argue that's perhaps some of the reasons that Matt Wolff has voiced his struggles over the last year. Everyone matures professionally and personally at a different pace. You can't be held to the standards of somebody else, but that's a difficult thing to accept if you're playing for a living.
That's why we do this segment, Winners Who Didn't Win. And how about honorable mention, the guys that are from Mexico, Abe Anser, Alvaro Ortiz, and Carlos. We spoke to Alvaro last week. Carlitos had a birthday during the past week, and all three of these players able to make the cut and play their way into the weekend. So congrats to them as well.
Well, we spend a lot of time these days, Damon, talking about guys who aren't playing much. And here's another one, Bryson DeChambeau, showing off his surgically repaired hand. We'll talk about him and when we'll next see him in action. Next.
Back on Golf Today, and folks, a warning, some tough pictures in this segment. Back on April 14th, Bryson DeChambeau took to social media announcing that he underwent successful surgery on a fracture in the hamate bone of his left hand. Then in his post, DeChambeau said that he made attempts to play through the injury, but it caused him to alter his grip and swing, resulting in his being unable to compete at golf's highest level. Went on to say he would be taking time to recover from the procedure and looks forward to competing within the next couple of months. So Josh Scobie, former NFL kicker, friend of the program, Jacksonville Jaguars, said no big deal. Bryson just hitting it one-handed past our group. in a charity event. Now, this is what that hand looks like. Again, kind of some tough pictures here. Healing up, gripped the club today, can't hold on to it for long, but getting there. You take a look at those stitches on that left hand. But then, Eamon, the doc said, I can start chipping again. So, you know, kind of working his way back to good health.
Let's hope, because that looks as though it would be painful to hold a club right on that hamate line.
Yeah, I've never seen an athlete that thinks that he or she, you know, can't come back quicker. I mean, look at Tiger, you know, defying doctor's orders back in 08 at that U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. You don't find many athletes that come back too late. They always come back too early. You just hope in this situation, and he tried to play through it at the Masters in 76-80. You hope that Bryson can get back to playing the kind of golf that he wants to, because I believe he's so additive to the sport.
He certainly is, and he's actually missed the drama that he brought last year, which wasn't necessarily always positive. It added a great deal of depth to the PGA Tour, certainly the fan experience. It's noticeable when he's not in this game, and it's regrettable when he's not in this game. You know, he's only played 6 starts this year, and 3 of them he missed the cut. 1 he withdrew, which was in Saudi Arabia. He didn't make it out of group play in the match play, and he tied for 25th at the Century. He's now down to 21st in the official World Golf Rankings. We basically have no chance of seeing him at the PGA Championship in a couple of weeks. He made clear when he had that surgery a couple of days after the Masters concluded that he was probably out for 2 months. Right. So you really got to figure that maybe 6 weeks from now, the US Open, the one major he has won, that he may actually be targeting that as the comeback. But to your point, there is benefit sometimes to just accepting the fact that you need to write off part of your season. We've seen other guys do it before, and it may be one of those instances where we need Bryson DeChambeau to just not rush any kind of return, especially when you swing with the force and violence that he does. The stresses he puts on his body are considerably greater than, you know, a Freddie Couples or an Ernie Els, someone who's swinging a lot more sort of genteel pace. So you don't want to see him jeopardize any more of the season than he's already had to concede.
I wonder if he'll have the emotions that Brooks Koepka had, and these two guys probably don't like to be compared to each other very much. But I remember Brooks coming back from injury and saying, you know, man, I missed the game, and it made me appreciate the game in a different way and maybe a little bit more when the game is taken away from you. I hope that Bryson does have some of those emotions.
Well, you can certainly tell that golf fans miss having him around just simply by the engagement of the stuff that he puts on social media. We can't wait to actually see him back inside the ropes again.
Yeah, Bryson DeChambeau is missed. Tiger Woods is missed. But you know what? He made some noise last week playing that practice round at Southern Hills ahead of the PGA Championship. The biggest takeaways next. And plus, a win under his belt on Sunday. Should we prepare for Jon Rahm to once again be called the best player in the game? Is it him? Is it Scotty? We debate. Golf Today makes a turn.
No one loves Jon Rahm as much as the oddsmakers. Fresh off a win in Mexico, should he be the favorite for the PGA Championship in 2 weeks? Scotty Scheffler would like a word. And someone who'd like to spoil that Rahm-Scheffler party in Tulsa is Tiger Woods. He played a practice round at Southern Hills last week, and we'll hear what his caddy thinks about what he saw out there. And a former Masters champion is playing host on the DP World Tour this week. Danny Willett will join us. Golf Today continues now.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Golf Today on your television set or perhaps your phone. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch. So I think Jon Rahm checks an important box for his season. We're going to get into some other players that are kind of maybe on the clock. I mean, this game is just unrelenting. You know, it's almost like football. You lose, and then you got to kind of stew in it for a little bit and wait for the next game, or maybe you have a bye, so you got to wait a couple of weeks. Man, this golf business, now they're well compensated, but it can be tough when you want to win a lot.
It's also a good week for the bookies. When you say they've got their favorite, who seems to have been the favorite for months now for every tournament he's entered, and we've had debates on this show heading into weeks where we thought, how could John Rahm possibly still be the favourite given the form he's in of late? But they're going to be pretty happy to see him at the top of that odds board heading to Southern Hills as well. That's shaping up to be a really strong major championship. You've got him in form, you've got Scottie Scheffler in form, and a lot of guys who have something to prove, not least somebody we'll discuss later, Rory McIlroy. Mm. He's this week's John Rahm, the guy who's heading to the Wells Fargo Championship, expected to perform really well.
Yeah, that PGA Championship just a couple of weeks away. Folks, time now, though, for Winning Moments presented by Wynn Grips. Check out how John Rahm got the job done in Mexico for that seventh career PGA Tour victory, holding off some big-time chasers. Tony Finau, two wins on this PGA Tour CV. Kurt Kitayama, Brandon Wu all gave him a push, but it was Rahm now with six consecutive seasons with at least one victory, closing with that two under par round of 69. So his season in review so far, 11 starts, 10 cuts made, five top 10 finishes in the victory. Man, folks are hard on these players. The expectations to continue to perform, and John Rahm answering the bell in Mexico. So why don't we take a look at the outright odds for that PGA Championship, powered by our friends at PointsBet Sportsbook, Southern Hills, the site. You see him right now flat-footed at plus 1,200 with Justin Thomas and Scottie Scheffler. Colin Morikawa not far behind. There's Rory. Cam Smith is your player's champ. DJ, Brooks Koepka. There's Tiger. We'll often see Tiger. Is it that smaller writing, maybe a little off color there, at plus 4,000. So here are the odds. I guess the question is, has John Rahm done enough now with this win in Mexico to be not just a co-favorite, but an outright favorite?
Not in my mind. I still think Scottie Scheffler has got to be the favorite, Damon. Mm. John Rahm's clearly rediscovered the form that wasn't there earlier in the year. But I also look at who he's beating. And with Scottie Scheffler at the Phoenix Open and at the Arnold Palmer Invitational and then the match play and at the Masters, those are four of the strongest fields that Scottie Scheffler has faced and come out on top of. John Rahm's field in Mexico wasn't of that caliber. Now, confidence doesn't know where it comes from. Confidence comes with the trophy, and John Rahm's leaving with the trophy. He's clearly taken away a lot of positives in terms of where he's directed his game, the emphasis he's put on his shortcomings earlier in the year. And he talked about how he's kind of pleased and proud of himself of how he navigated the stress all week long. He referred to it as a stressful week, which is just an amazing statement from a guy who's won a major. But that's because he went in as the runaway favourite and he left with a trophy. That's hard to do. He's going to take a lot of confidence from that. But I still have to give the edge to Scottie Scheffler, who says Southern Hills is his favourite golf course.
He does, but I'm going to disagree with you. I think that Scottie Scheffler eventually is going to cool down and that John Rahm right now is heating up. That's what golf has shown us at the highest level. You know, maybe outside of Tiger Woods, who's going to sustain this for an entire season? Should Scottie Scheffler keep playing the type of golf that he has over the last several months? You're talking about one of the greatest seasons of all time. Should he continue to check off victories, be it at Southern Hills or perhaps at a U.S. Open outside Boston at Brookline or an Open Championship at St. Andrews? Should he win a Masters and an Open? You're talking about one of the greatest seasons that we've seen in the last 20, 25 years, which Tiger made, you know, normal and regular and rudimentary. So I think that just by the law of golf, that Scottie will probably cool down a little bit and that John Rahm could be on the verge of playing the type of sustained golf that he suspects to, especially when you consider that in his 22 major championship starts, he has nine top tens in said majors. So I think that John Rahm unlocked something, even if it was against a weaker field down in Puerto Vallarta.
Yeah, he's definitely in a lot better position than he was even a few weeks ago. The confidence is clearly going to bolster his chances for Southern Hills. But I look at a guy like Scheffler, who's eminently capable of doing what we've seen Brooks Koepka do and Jordan Spieth do and Rory McIlroy do and pick up a couple of major titles in 1 year, winning them back-to-back and then facing the pressure of going to the country club in pursuit of the Grand Slam. That would be a different thing entirely, a different order of magnitude. Mm. But Scottie Scheffler has proven that he is up for the biggest moments in this game, because it's hard to imagine a more pressure-filled round of golf Scottie Scheffler could ever play than entering that final round of the Masters with the lead.
Yeah.
And he proved that he was up to that challenge. So there's nothing this game can throw at Scottie Scheffler for the rest of the year that is going to take away that kind of bulletproof feeling he gave himself at Augusta National. And he's going to what he says is his favourite course, where he's won a big college tournament on in the past. To me, Scottie Scheffler is the guy who has nothing to lose, nothing to prove. And I don't think that's necessarily true of everybody else in the field.
It's a wonderful point that you make. And he also, you know, didn't bounce the ball at that Rangers game. That was a lot of pressure wearing the green jacket that was buttoned up. And I also think that the appearance and reemergence of Tiger Woods can only help Scottie Scheffler. Because you have to think, once it's official, we know Tiger's jet is on the ground once again in Tulsa when it's time to compete for that PGA, that once again, the Scottie Schefflers, the Jordan Spieth winner for the career Grand Slam, the Rory McIlroys, all these players will become B players when we know for sure that Tiger Woods is competing at Southern Hills.
And Rahm said he drew something from that final round pairing with Tiger Woods at Augusta National on last month. And he may have another chance to actually play with Tiger Woods in Tulsa in a couple of weeks. Tiger was on the grounds Thursday at Southern Hills Country Club in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the site of his fourth and final PGA Championship victory in 2007. Tiger was out there with Kerry Cosby, the director of golf at Southern Hills, who caddied for him, soaking up all the local knowledge he could possibly get.
Yeah, it was a huge, huge, I think, benefit for a player who, listen, won that PGA back in 2007, but as you detailed last week, Gil Hance with some renovations on the golf course. So Tiger will have a bank of knowledge that some players won't have, but just wanting to kind of get some more information about the golf course.
And here's what Kerry Cosby had to say about Tiger Woods. He said everything is so smooth with him now. His rhythm is great. He hit it straight and plenty far. He pitched it and putted it great. This ought to scare a few guys, Damon. I know guys can hit it past him now, but watching him work was amazing. He's so meticulous, detailed, and immersed in what he's doing. He was very inquisitive on lines and the best angles. I think he can contend. It's like Michael Jordan late in his career, playing defense and hitting jump shots. Whoever wins here is going to have to be a great chipper, and he is still that. Unless he has a setback of some kind, he's playing. This trip was all business.
I tell you what, Eamon, and I remember when Tiger came back from the back injury and DJ had played with him in Miami and, oh, Tiger's hitting it good, and Brad Faxon, you know, I mean, all these guys. Every time Tiger, you know, he's hitting it as long as ever. I'm almost getting to the point now where I'm not going to be viewing Tiger Woods as the convalescing golfer anymore. I'm just going to look at him as a 46-year-old, 15-time major champion, 82-time PGA Tour winner, and start judging him as Tiger Woods, the golfer now. And
you think he's luring them into a false sense of security?
I tell you what, I just can't judge him now other than anything being Tiger. We know he can walk 72 holes. He did it at Augusta National. The golf swing looks fantastic. I know how the man thinks. He is as competitive as anybody that's ever, you know, played any sport in history of athletics. I'm going to start to view him now, not worrying about how his leg is doing. I know he's putting in the time off of the golf course. I can't imagine what it's like, the Epsom salt baths and the stretching and the unseen things that he's going to have to do to be ready. But I think if Tiger Woods is making trips to Southern Hills 3 weeks before the PGA, this is about turning the page from convalescing to winning.
It really is. And what we're seeing out here with Kerry Cosby last week is kind of refamiliarizing himself with a golf course that he won on 15 years ago. He shot 8 under par and held off Woody Austin. But it's not so much refamiliarizing himself with the golf course, which has seen some changes, but the idea of competing, of preparation, and not just showing up to fly blind. He could do that at Augusta National because of the tremendous reservoir of institutional knowledge he has about Augusta National. That's perhaps a little more shallow reservoir of knowledge about Southern Hills, given the changes that we've seen out there. He's doing his preparation. You can be pretty sure Joe LaCava is going to be doing his preparation as well, so that by the time they get there, presuming Tiger does commit to the tournament 2 weeks from now, they'll be locked in and ready to go. He's not going for a ceremonial position. It's just not in the man.
Yeah, it's not. And I remember watching Tiger and how he would build up toward major championships in years past. It was, you know, I'll go win in San Diego in January, or I'll win Bay Hill in March, or I'll win the Memorial Tournament ahead of a U.S. Open. This is going to be a different formula for him to be the successful player that he wants to be. And the only way he views success is victory. Now, obviously, there was doubt about his ability to come back. He has quieted those doubts, at least in terms of withstanding one of the most difficult walks in golf, and not just the hilly course, but the 5 inches plus rain they had at Augusta National leading up to that opening round. But I do think he's trying to figure out, as you said, what's going to be the formula in this form where I'm not competing necessarily 2 weeks before the major. Can he do it by playing a practice round 3 weeks in advance, by doing his homework at home, competing maybe against JT and Rory and DJ and Jupiter? I guess those are the questions. Can he fashion a match toughness, as Pete Sampras used to say, ahead of these majors without all the starts beforehand?
But does that not make you then wonder if Tiger has to recalibrate the famous statement of first is the only thing that matters and second place sucks?
Yeah, you'd think.
If he doesn't have the lead-in prep time, if he doesn't have the competitive sharpness, if he doesn't have all of the starts that he would typically have had going into major championships, if all he is doing is targeting the majors and perhaps a couple of tour events that he's got great familiarity with, say a Memorial or Arnold Palmer Invitational, Torrey Pines, things like that, then presumably he would have a normal person, a mortal, would perhaps rewire their expectations of what it is. And I'm not necessarily sure Tiger's maybe as driven by the trophy as he used to be. There's a certain humility that's been evident in Tiger, and we particularly saw it at the Masters throughout the entire week, this sense of gratitude that he was even there, this understanding of how close he came to losing everything, much less his career, but his life. There is a certain humble approach that seemed evident in him that at his peak was never evident. He had nothing to be humble about at his peak, but life has kind of humbled him over the years since. And maybe the attitude has changed. Maybe the expectations have changed a little bit as well. It's, you know, to him, it's all a physical battle at this stage still. And what was really interesting is we talked here last week about how Southern Hills is really hill rather than hills.
Right.
There's one big hill up by the clubhouse. And there was video of Tiger walking up that hill last week when he was out there. And he didn't look like a guy who was struggling out there at all. And that's got to be encouraging for him.
Yeah.
It should be worrisome for maybe a few guys in the field, because if Kerry Cosby is correct and Tiger's still hitting all the shots that he needs to hit out there, well then, you know, maybe his expectations will be a little more heading to Southern Hills than they were heading to Augusta National.
Yeah, I think Tiger is still all about business inside the ropes, but I do think you're onto something in terms of the gratitude, and he even expressed that in some of his post-round comments at Augusta National, where he was asked about the message he wanted to convey to the folks at home, and he was like, you know, never give up. He said, I was in my hospital bed for 3 months, and then afterwards I did something every single day, large or small, to make this comeback. So, you know, I'm not sure if he would have made that comment 15, 20 years ago about what the folks at home might think. It was like he was being almost like an oracle, kind of sharing the fact that you should never give up whatever is thrown your way. I thought it was a very different energy from Tiger. Back on Golf Today, a look at the upcoming DP World Tour schedule. This week, the tour heads to the Belfry for the Betfred British Masters, hosted by Danny Willett. Seems a little young to be a host. Maybe we'll talk to him about that in just a little bit. Good field. You got Ryder Cup stars like Westy and Thomas Bjorn as well. And you got Belgium and Netherlands coming around the bend. So right now we're joined by the 2016 Masters champ and the host at the Belfry this week. So it's good to see you, Danny. But I got to say, you seem a little young at 34 to be a host. How did this role come about?
Yeah, no, I guess you could say that, but we've had some great hosts in these last kind of 6-7 years. Westy, Rosie, Polt. The lads have all done it. Tommy did it a few years ago, and I hosted last year. We thought we were going to get crowds there, obviously just after the pandemic, but unfortunately they didn't let us. So I asked if I could host it again, because it's a big privilege to be able to host it, such a big event as the Betfred British Masters. And you know, now this year we're going to finally have fans, so family and friends can come down, and great golf course in the Belfry. So yeah, we're all set for a really good week.
I'm curious how many of those family and friends you're going to hear from this week, Dana, who want to be part of the show, part of the tickets. When you were hosted last year, you finished tied 11th, so you played pretty well. How do you juggle the responsibilities and the distractions and the entertaining of family and friends with actually trying to win the golf tournament?
Yeah, last year, again, was pretty simple. It was probably the easiest hosting duties anyone's ever had to do, because we were just a few Zoom calls and things, obviously with restrictions last year. So, yeah, it could be a little different this year. It's an hour away from where I live. So, yeah, there's a hell of a lot of family and friends coming down to watch all week and trying to keep sponsors happy and meet everyone and make sure that the hospitality is kind of, you know, you get in there and you get to see the guys who ultimately are sponsoring the event and helping it, you know, be so successful and running so well. So, yeah, this week could be a little bit more of a juggling task, but... yeah, we should be okay. Juggling two kids and stuff at home is probably a good practice.
Danny, folks always talk about Raymond Floyd driving down Magnolia Lane and coming to life. Ben Crenshaw, Spieth, Tiger. You finished tied for 12th at the Masters. How much of that was you finding some form, and how much of that was a reflection of your deep affection for that place?
Yeah, it is. It's whenever you drive down Magnolia, there is something that happens inside. You do get the butterflies, all the memories flood back in. Of that for me, obviously in 2016, and obviously my best result there since I won. The game's been in a nice place. I've played pretty consistent this year. No sparkling results, but played quite nicely. So yeah, it is a very special feeling to be able to go back to that place year after year and put your green jacket on in the locker room and have a bit of lunch in it and stuff. It's, you know, I guess it's one of the things that you get, you know, for winning such an exclusive major and being part of that club of the past champions. And, you know, yeah, brought back some nice memories and had a really, really good week, which was pretty pleasing for myself in the work I've been putting in.
Did you feel a pressure to live up to that win, Danny? Because it's not as though you've been quiet since then. You have won three times on the DP World Tour since you won the Masters. Where are you now in terms of your game or what you expect from yourself?
I think straight afterwards, I probably struggled. Looking back in hindsight, I probably spread myself too thin. I tried travelling around and playing events all over the world. And yeah, I think the energy levels versus wanting to play and wanting to be there and stuff like that probably weren't matched up. In hindsight, I'd have probably done it a bit differently. But... you know, with where the game is now, the game's in a nice place. And I think I'm at a stage now in my career as well where I can now look back at that and really appreciate, you know, what I achieved that week. And then use that going forward. And like I said, I'm 34. At the minute, the body's in really good shape. The injuries have basically all left, which has been good. That's been a lot of hard work on the body to try and get that working. So now I'm at a place where I'd like to, at 34, I'd still like to push on. I'd still like to win more golf tournaments. Yeah, I won three times on the DP World Tour, but I haven't won in America since Augusta. So, yeah, one of my main aims after winning the Dunhill was trying to get the consistency back in the ball flight. And me and Foles have worked pretty hard, and I've seemed to have got that in a place that I like right now. So, yeah, hopefully this means that, you know, when we get into contention a couple of times, you know, I've still got that bit between my teeth that when I get into contention, I'm pretty good. And hopefully, I can kind of get back there at some point soon and hopefully get another W on the board at some point.
To that point, Danny, I read a few weeks ago where you said you would go to the ends of the earth to grab that second major. What did you mean by that?
It's one of them, isn't it, where after you win... you've got all the best intentions in the world of carrying on and riding this crest. And, you know, the media are, if you win Augusta, you've obviously got a chance for the Grand Slam and all them kind of things. I was ninth in the world. Everything seemed to be really easy, but the body wasn't in a great place. I was batting a lot of things. And like I said, because I spread myself too thin, the exhaustion levels within the body just meant that little things crept up on me, little niggles here and there, playing through injuries because I'd already said that I was going to play and I didn't want to, you know, kind of go back on my word. And just things didn't go as to plan as what I was hoping they were going to do. You've got, like I said, you've had all best intentions to ride the wave and win three or four times that year and whatever else it may be. And that kind of took a three-year hiatus until I won in Dubai. So, yeah, I know the struggles it took to go from Augusta back to wherever I was in the world before winning Dubai, probably a hell of a long way down. And the feeling and the butterflies and the happiness that I got after winning Dubai because of the time I'd put in and the work I'd put in. And, you know, that was just to win a tour event. It was a big tour event, but it's still a tour event. It's not a major. So, yeah, I would basically, I think it just sums it up. I would put all hours in that were necessary. I'd change anything that people thought I needed to change to get there and slip on another green jacket. I think anyone in their right mind would probably do the same thing.
Well, that work paid off at the end of last year, Danny, when you won the Dunhill Links in St Andrews. What kind of confidence does winning there give to you heading to the Open Championship this summer?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the Open there. The last time the Open was there, I played with Zach on Sunday. I played with DJ in the last group on Saturday. Sorry, I think it was a Monday finish, actually, because of the wind. But yeah, the last 2 days I played with DJ and Zach, and that was the first real taste I'd had of being in contention in a major, and then actually playing with Zach, kind of seeing how he did it, how he approached it. Zach's not overly long. He doesn't do, you know, guys look at him and, you know, Zach's a two-time major champion, you know, but he controlled his ball flight brilliantly. He controlled his emotions down the stretch. I did give him a good read on 18 and he did say thanks for that when he boxed that one. You know, and I think for me, seeing how that was won there, it gives you confidence going forward. The Open, obviously being British, the British Open is, it is one of the biggest majors for us guys to win. You know, the butterflies you get walking onto the first tee, the amphitheatre down 18 is incredible. You clapped onto every tee, you clapped down fairways, you clapped onto greens. You know, and St Andrews is a really special place for an Open to be. So my record around there is pretty good in the Dunhill, obviously at the Open when it was last played there. So I'm looking forward to going back. Obviously, it's a couple of months away. There's still a lot of work to be done within the game to kind of keep it in nice shape and to iron out a few of the things that I need to work on for that particular week. But I think it's going to be a hell of an Open. Obviously, Tiger being back there is going to be great. The 150th at St Andrews. I think it's going to be a really spectacular week.
Well, Danny, it's great to see you. I'm glad you're healthy. Good to see you smiling. Best of luck with the playing and all the speeches and hosting and tickets that you have to give out. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's Danny Willett, 2016 Masters Champ. How about that conversation? He's, you know, going to the ends of the earth to get that second major. He's gone through some health issues, but seems to be in a really great frame of mind.
Isn't this kind of a perfect evidence of just how fickle this game is? You know, you go back 6 years, Danny Willett had the one title that everyone in this game wanted, and he won it in such dramatic fashion. And it's so often overlooked that the implosion Jordan Spieth had on the 12th hole that day, Danny Willett played a hell of a round of golf.
He did, absolutely.
To win that Masters. And now he's trying to gradually work his way back up to the peak. And this game is all about peaks and valleys, I guess. And some valleys aren't quite as deep as others. John Rahm hasn't been in a particularly deep valley.
No.
He's certainly on a high peak today, though.
Pretty neat that Danny Willett can walk into that champions dinner every year also and sit next to like a Sir Nick Faldo and pick some brains and kind of get himself back on the good foot.
And just like Faldo, a claret jug would go well with that green jacket, too.
No doubt. Danny's excited. We're excited for him. Thanks for joining us on this Monday. Tomorrow, by the way, Harrison Endicott, winner on the Korn Ferry Tour, joins us. Have a great day. We will see you tomorrow.